healthcare costs. And so the only thing we can do is really try to grapple with how to get people back into coverage and stop this madness.
And finally, what about President Trump saying we want to stop giving money to the health insurance industry?
Well, that's just a lie. We were never giving money to the health insurance industry. The money was going to individuals. It's financial assistance that's run through the tax code with it to individuals. It basically provides financial assistance in the form of a tax credit to enable you to be able to buy coverage. If he cared about controlling health insurance profits, he would control health insurance companies, and he would require health insurance companies, providers, big pharma, to control their costs by rate setting, like countries like Switzerland that have a private health insurance system, but the government sets the rates that providers, pharma, is paid. We should do something like that at the very least.
And when you say at the very least, 10 seconds on universal health care.
Yes. I mean, obviously, if we the program that best controls costs in America is Medicare or the veteran system, and that's because we have government setting rates. If we care about costs, we want to expand coverage, we should do something about setting rates.
Elizabeth Benjamin, Vice President of Health Initiatives at the Community Service Society of New York, member of the New York mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani's transition team. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, now through December 31st.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Rumble on the River, presenting their 28th community forum, What's the Deal with Data Centers, on Wednesday, January 7th at 825 Northwest 18th Avenue. Doors and info tables at 5:30 p.m. and community panel at 6:30 p.m. More info available at 350pdx.org/event.
We'll be right back.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the final installment of Too Much Information for the year 2025. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. So happy that you could join me this morning for this year-end wrap-up, and I look forward at the year to come. Tracy is not with us this morning. Hopefully, she'll be able to join in soon, at which point we will welcome her onto the program. But for this, for the time being, it's just you and me. So as I mentioned, this will be our final show of the 2025 calendar year. And it has been, for me, as I'm sure it has been for many of you, an exhausting, trying year in almost every possible sort of sense. This has been a long one. It's gone on seemingly forever, and each day has been filled with more and more bad news. And of course, I'm generalizing. This year has not gone by without some high notes. It has not gone by without events that have given us reason to hope going forward. But by and large, this first year of Trump's second presidency, those words sound absurd even as I hear them coming out of my mouth. It's been difficult. It's been long. And here we are at it. The end. Together. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Why has this year seemingly felt like it has gone on forever? I think it's because largely the relentless barrage of activity coming from the executive branch of the United States government and the relentless drumbeat of bad news coming at us both domestically and from around the world. I'm going to hit on some of what I think were the most egregious transgressions of Trump's first year in office in this, his second term, his punctuated second term. Let's not forget the fact that he spent a year in more or less political exile, while presumably the incumbent administration at that time would go about its business making sure that he went to jail. But as we all know, that didn't happen. And here we are again, talking about Donald Trump's presidency again. 503-231-8187. So as I mentioned, I put together a list of some of the lowlights of the past year, and I'm just going to run through a few of those. I'm very interested to hear what you think on any of these topics that I bring up, or if there's something that you feel I've overlooked, by all means, please give us a call and let us know. Because there's so much. There is just so much. So let's get started. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the establishment of for lack of a better terms, is a transactional presidency, a mafioso presidency, perhaps you might call it. Trump, even more than in his first term, has made the office of the presidency into a pay-for-play operation. And I'm going to go into some detail in about the many ways in which that has happened. But the comparison between his first term, in which we were saying this very same thing, look, he's turning this presidency into a transactional operation. What he's managed to do in his the first year of his second term has so far eclipsed what he managed in his first term that it's staggering. It's a transactional presidency on a scope and scale that we have never seen before. I'm looking over some of the things I've written down here, and it's stunning. Let's talk about cryptocurrency just to start out. Early in Trump's term, he actually just a few days before he was sworn into office, launched an operation called World Liberty Financial, which is essentially a holding company for the issuance of a Trump-branded crypto coin. He promptly sold about $2 billion worth of this crypto coin to investors from around the world, most notably, and his largest investor in cryptocurrency by far, the United Arab Emirates, who themselves ponied up most of that $2 billion. Now, this is remarkable on so many levels. The fact that Trump and his family intended to turn the presidency into their personal cash register has been evident for some time, but rarely has it been so clearly announced as the formation and the launch of a new cryptocurrency company backed by what is in essence the royal family here in the United States, with money from royal families around the world. You can see the sort of club that Trump is aspiring to join here in his second term as president of the United States. $2 billion, a number that has only increased over the ensuing year. This is cryptocurrency that, for all intents and purposes, has no practical value in the world. I suppose you could resell it if you want, but the resale market for it is deeply depressed. It's opening its value upon issuance is far greater than it is now on the cryptocurrency trading market. So the purpose really of this cryptocurrency is not for investors to make money, but for investors to buy access to the president of the United States. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about a transactional mafioso presidency. It's not just the UAE. Oh, excuse me. Hang on for 1 second. I think this might be Tracy attempting to join the program. Stand by. And we're back. We are back, and joining me, Tracy Simmons. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners. Oh, my God, I suck.
You know, we're surveying the wreckage of Trump's, the first year of Trump's second term, so, you know, you're right in character. You're right in keeping with today's theme.
It's just a mess. Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. Here I am. I feel like, you know, like we needed to just do a recap on how ridiculous this whole year was. Yeah. I recently watched the movie Idiocracy, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they really did foretell a lot of the most ridiculous things that we've been dealing with in the present. And so that is one of the dumbest movies ever. And we are in the most ridiculous times ever. So I just figured, hey, you know, let's think about like all of the things that we've seen this last year, the inconsistencies, the ironies that is, you know, fully dead. Irony just really doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, what say you, Abe? What is ever?
Well, so far, we just have begun going through my list of things. We're talking about establishment of the presidency as a transactional office, a means to enrich himself and his family. And we're talking about the launch of World Liberty Financial right before he was inaugurated, and the billions of dollars that his family has made from the sale of cryptocurrency since then. And noting that the purpose of this cryptocurrency is not for investors to realize profits on their investment, but rather to buy access to Donald Trump and the presidency of the United States of America. So that's about where we left off.
Yeah, that's plenty. That's a great place to start.
So this is problematic in many ways. And we've talked about this on this program before, but I think it bears reiterating that this is corruption, absolutely. And one might say that the office of the presidency has steam. That's absolutely that it has been always corrupted to one degree or another. That is also true. The sort of corruption we're talking about under Trump is both qualitatively and quantitatively different than what has happened in the past. For example, no previous president, to my knowledge, has established an alternate currency company and issued coinage from it in order to give others favor and access to more favors down the line. And never before has a president, a graft machine, started it going before he took office. It's astonishing. And it's what really amazes me, Tracy, is not only is his family personally billions of dollars over the course of a single year, a single calendar year, has seen the Trump family fortune grow by billions of dollars. I'm just wondering why this isn't angering more people. Is this in producing public outrage on a wider scale, particularly among his supporters?
Yes. Right? I think what's so interesting about his supporters is, he really can do no wrong, right? He's truly the cult of personality, and they're not able to really see any of it. I mean, right now we're having this conversation about, you know, QAnon, and what happened to QAnon? You know, QAnon was the supporting group of Donald Trump. Many of those folks were at the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Many of those folks, you know, really thought that they had a righteous claim to the 2020 election. Those folks, you know, were steeped in and mired in conspiracy theories. And one of those was Pizzagate, right? Where, you know, it was like the Hillary Clinton and the Democrats had some kind of, you know, dungeon in a pizza shop in D.C. where they were trafficking children, right? And now we see the Epstein files and all of this, and we're being told, you know, just chill out. You know, really, that doesn't matter. It's Donald Trump. We knew he was like that. And, you know, it's just the level of inconsistency that there were people who were willing to, you know, go to really dramatic lengths to connect these unconnectable dots around Pizzagate. They've pretty much disappeared in the space when we're talking about Donald Trump and the Epstein files and things that there's it's well documented, right? We're being, of course, gaslit to the degree of which that's documented, of course, by Pam Bondi and the Department of Justice and many others, right? But it's still, you know, pointing towards the Democrats showing pictures of Bill Clinton and Jeffrey Epstein, where there are thousands of photos of Donald Trump and video footage of Donald Trump, and we don't even know what is the depth of that. So it's just, once again, right, we're in the dumbest timeline, and I what keeps coming up for me is that this is really a person who, it doesn't matter what they were to do, the people that support them are supporting him not because of him, but because he will do the things that make them feel good about who they are, right? They're supporting the racism. They're supporting the xenophobia. They're supporting really their own aspirations to manipulate and exploit others to become a billionaire, right? Like all of these things. It's the worst kind of people supporting the worst kind of person.
People supporting the worst kind of person. I think that's that is a fitting brand for tremendous reason. Okay, so we have noted that Trump has turned the office of the presidency into a machine for the enrichment of himself and his family. We have talked about the corruption of the U.S. Department of Justice, about how the president considers the attorney general to be his personal lawyer and use the power of Department of Justice to go after his own political enemies, particularly those like difficult for him during his last term and during the intervening Biden administration. United States from damning evidence about his participation in a pedophilia ring. I don't feel like that's hyperbole to say that. Obviously, whatever is in the Epstein files that Trump does not want us to see must be so incredibly damning that we're only left to speculate that you know, he knew Jeffrey Epstein very well and was very much involved in Epstein's whole scheme.
Yeah.
So what else do you have from your list of lowlights?
One of my list of lowlights was the promise of no new wars. And of course, you know, we've reported on this show that the numerous of bombings in the Caribbean Sea, bombings of quote-unquote suspected drug smuggling boats. We've seen just recently bombing of Nigeria. Of course, the pretext and context for that was there's some kind of conspiracy to harm Christians. Well, no, most people who know what's going on in Nigeria know there's a very bloody conflict and a group of people that are killing everybody, including Christians. They're killing everybody. This is a, you know, a long-term and, you know, it's a strategy, of course, by the United States to use such a pretext to go after another nation's oil, to go after another nation's resources. We know rare earth minerals are located in Nigeria. And so, you know, we're bombing Nigeria. The ground game has just started in Venezuela, supposedly. And Trump famously and regularly touts himself to have stopped 8 wars, including what he said he would do in Ukraine on day one. We're still waiting for that to materialize. And, of course, seeing him just a few days ago on a stage with Vladimir Zelensky and his very stoic participation in ridiculousness. But, right, so you're claiming that you've ended 8 wars, couldn't even name all 8 if he wanted to. It would be, you know, whatever number he came up with times 15 would still be 0 wars that he's ended. And yet he's starting different kinds of conflicts in other places. And once again, claiming that he should be the Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Well, he is the FIFA Peace Prize winner, which, you know, let's not turn up our noses at that. You know, I'm really glad you mentioned this because this dovetails with another of his lowlights for the year that's on my list, which is blurring the line between between church and state. I'm going to read to you the post that he put out on Christmas when we launched this strike into Nigeria. This is the President of the United States on his personal social media platform. "Tonight, at my direction, as Commander-in-Chief, the United States launched a powerful and deadly strike against ISIS terrorist scum in northwest Nigeria who have been targeting and viciously killing, primarily, innocent Christians at levels not seen for many years and even centuries. I have previously warned these terrorists that if they did not stop the slaughtering of Christians, there would be hell to pay. And tonight, there was. The Department of War executed numerous perfect strikes, as only the United States is capable of doing. Under my leadership, our country will not allow radical Islamic terrorism to prosper. May God bless our military, and Merry Christmas to all, including the dead terrorists, of which there will be many more if their slaughter of Christians continues." Now, Tracy, do you think the president is a particularly devout man? Do you think he was motivated by faith?
I'm sorry, nobody is going to say Merry Christmas in the same you know, glom of sentences about bombing and killing other people. I'm sorry. It's just, once again, right, we are living in the most ironic, most ridiculous timeline. And, I mean, it's just, what I think for me is even more frustrating is when we get a press who will repeat these ridiculous things and offer no pushback, no poking of the holes, no hello, what? No, this is, you know, because of course he and his cronies have purchased all of the legacy media, and the few outlets that are willing to push back, he will sue them as soon as possible, and so scare them through capricious lawsuits. We're sitting here as American people going, what?
Yeah, it's, I'm not a religious person. But I found that Christmas message, and a number of others from various high placed people in the administration on and around Christmas, I found that to be morally repugnant. We are not a Christian nation. We never have been a Christian nation. This has been made explicit in document after document, including, and perhaps most importantly, the Constitution of the United States. We are not a Christian nation, nor do we have any establishment of any other sort of religion on an official basis in this country. That is one of the bedrock principles of the individual liberties that we claim to prize so highly. The freedom of conscience and the freedom to worship or not worship as anyone sees fit. So to see the president and members of his administration embrace Christianity so overtly and issue messaging that is so explicitly pro-Christian, this ought to raise the eyebrows and the hackles of anybody who cares about these sorts of things. We are not, and I repeat, we are not a Christian nation. And for the President of the United States to not only invoke Christianity and elevate it above all other faiths, That's not only unconstitutional, but quite possibly illegal. And the fact that he conducted a military operation on Christmas Day, which for Christians is the celebration of the birth of their Savior, a figure who is known for his embrace of universal brotherhood and sisterhood, his embrace of peaceful values, of compassion, of empathy for one's fellow human beings. So for the president to bomb another country and evoke Christianity and Christmas and Jesus while he's doing it, as I mentioned, Tracy, I'm not a religious person, but I find that reprehensible.
Yeah, I think it's anything really done in the name of Christianity that is violent is really very much against the teaching of Christ. It's very much against the foundational principles of Christianity. When we began talking about immigration, and we're going to take 100,000 people out of society and send them somewhere, right? Like, the idea of that even is like, huh, how Christian is that? But what's interesting, the Department of War, the Department of Justice, the State Department, many of these different departments have a social media following. And whoever is doing their social media continues this theme within the social media. It's very scary. But once again, right, I've encouraged folks to watch the film Bad Faith and understand how Christian nationalism is being used by this administration and has been used by other administrations to advance fascism, right? This idea that everyone has to believe the same thing, that we are, as a nation, connected by this belief system, and that belief system allows the fascists to go after the people we don't really like. And so that's the tool. It's being used in broad daylight, in plain sight, and it should be putting people's hackles up.
Yeah, you mentioned the messaging from other highly placed members of the administration. I have examples of those, but I'm going to skip reading them right now because I think they would just be gilding the lily at this point. We have an administration that is openly embracing and favoring one faith at the expense of all other religions. That's something that ought to give every freedom-loving American pause.
Yeah.
503-231-8187. Okay, so we've touched on now the corruption of the White House and its transformation into a profit-making operation. We've talked about the corruption of the Justice Department. We've talked about the summary executions and murders taking place on the high seas north of South America. We have talked about the blurring of the line between church and state. The next thing on my list, Tracy, is the ending of the of USAID, the United States Institution for International Aid and Development. This was a casualty of the Doge era, the Doge period, early in 2025 when Elon Musk was taking a chainsaw to the inner workings of the federal government. One of the first things on the chopping block was USAID. This is an organization that oversaw the distribution of foreign aid from the United States to countries all over the world. This represented a tiny fraction of the federal budget, less than 1% of total expenditures went to USAID. But at the same time, USAID did more to spread not only goodwill towards the United States around the world, but actually to do measurable, manifest good work in the world using United States taxpayer resources. In my mind, Tracy, this sort of thing, and I fully acknowledge the tension that exists between spending money abroad and spending money here in the United States. Regardless of that tension, I think this is one of the best things that we as a nation, particularly the world's preeminent nation economically, and one might argue culturally, it's one of the best things that we could do in the world. And we have asked that USAID is no more. We are no longer, as a nation, spending money on humanitarian projects around the world. Models from Boston University estimate that this has already, in less than a year, resulted in almost 600,000 deaths around the world. And researchers at UCLA estimate that unless USAID is restored, that the death toll from its loss could reach 14 million by the year 2030. This is an entirely avoidable atrocity, Tracy.
Every atrocity we are currently witnessing is a policy choice. I promise you that. And I've said it too many times, unfortunately, and it makes me very sad. But at the outset of this, I said clearly, people will die, and it will be on our hands. And people, of course, are dying. People are dying stateside. People are dying in concentration camps. People are dying, of course, the people that would have benefited from those programs at USAID, was funding, was supporting, was helping at the grassroots level and at the NGO level.
Yeah.
This current administration is bonded with a eugenics kind of functioning ideology around who deserves to live. If people don't have the strength, the resources, or the ability to sustain themselves, they will die. And too bad, right? There's a level of disregard for human life that also the irony is in consistently saying one is pro-life because they don't like abortion. Right, the inconsistencies here don't even make sense. You don't like abortion. You will not, you know, support a woman's choice around a ball of cells that is growing and will eventually become a human. But you won't support humans who are currently alive and need support and resources and help, whether that's through, you know, TANF, right, the temporary assistance for needy families, forcing people who may not be able to work to work or have work requirements on things like food assistance programs, right? We know that AIDS medication was supporting, was being supported and distributed by USAID programs. When people don't have those medicines, they die, right? I mean, just so many good things were coming out of these programs, and to say, you know, we are a pro-life administration, yet somehow have disdain for certain human lives is just completely ridiculous. It's ironic.
Yeah, it is ironic, too, especially right after we finished talking about this administration's embrace of Christianity. It seems about the least Christian thing that you could do is to stop helping people who really need the help. So that is a what's the word I'm looking for? A sin? Yes, sin. That's a sin I think that we will pay for a long time. Fortunately, it's something that is fairly easily remedied. We simply decide that we want to be a wealthy nation that is interested in helping poorer nations once again. 503-231-8187. Let's talk about the big one, Tracy. Mass deportation.
Mm-hmm.
Mass deportation. Mm-hmm. What comes to your mind when we talk about the past year?
Nazi Germany. The whole idea of remigration, right? People who have migrated to your country and migrating them somewhere else is Nazi speak, full stop. I'm just going to say that. During the 2024 election cycle, when I saw people with their signs saying, deportation now, I'm going, this is real bad. This is terrible. Now we've got people who are being stolen from their communities. And, you know, there's a long history of this as a strategy for, you know, it leads to, we'll just say that, leads to genocide. It's not, these things are not disconnected, right? So right now, as an American society, we're normalizing this behavior and saying that because someone is in the country without documentation, that they are illegal, right? They are an illegal person. We've said it millions of times as well. You know, you can't be illegal on stolen property, on stolen ground. No person is illegal. Borders are fake. They don't really exist. We've created that. But I go back to my young self and learning about the Holocaust, and I have a quote from the Diary of Anne Frank where she says, "Terrible things are happening outside. Poor, helpless people are being dragged out of their homes. Families are torn apart. Men, women, and children are separated. Children come home from school to find that their parents have disappeared." And she said that in January of 1943, as things were ramping up in the war, things were ramping up with regard to what the Nazis termed the solution to the Jewish problem, which of course was taking people out of society, putting them in concentration camps, and ultimately starving and murdering millions of people. These are history lessons that we all should have got. History repeats until we recognize the patterns and stop the repetition. And here we're just in a really dark moment in history. And I keep saying, right, where is the outrage? When do the American people rise up and say, absolutely not on our watch? I'm hoping that we will, as a nation, do that. But I'm feeling less and less hopeful, because everyone seems so distracted.
This one, for me, it's difficult for me to find adequate words for how deeply offensive this is. The fact that people are being snatched off the street, whisked away, denied basic constitutional protections, denied right to counsel, denied the protections of the Fourth Amendment, and ultimately summarily exiled to horrible places around the world, one of which, of course, we've talked about in some detail, the Cicot prison in El Salvador, which is essentially a for-profit holding center for all the people that countries in the Western Hemisphere don't want to have around. They can now be sent to El Salvador, where they will presumably be well taken care of for however long you want them to be taken care of for. This is horrific. I have two young kids, one in elementary school, one in middle school. Both of their schools in the past year have gone into lockdown because of ICE activity either nearby in the neighborhood or right up on the campus itself. This is offensive on nearly every level, including those cliched and hackneyed Americanisms. Nobody anywhere in the world should ever have to fear this, should ever have to put up with that, with this sort of thing, least of all here in the United States, where we have made much ink over the years about our dedication to this very principle, that whatever else might be wrong with the United States, at least here you are free. At least here you don't have to worry about masked thugs grabbing you off the street and throwing you in a van and taking you off God knows where. We're only seeing the beginning of this because, as we talked about right after the passage of the Big Beautiful Bill Act, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Bureau now has many, many extra billions of dollars in its budget with which to hire more ICE enforcers. And as you might imagine, the standards for joining ICE are not what they are to join the FBI, just to name one, or even your local police department. They're taking just about anybody, including people who have been convicted, imprisoned, and subsequently pardoned by the president for their participation in the January 6th insurrection. These are bad people, Tracy. They are being hired so that they can finally exercise their worst impulses. They can finally take out their anger at the brown people that they have been nurturing and harboring for years and years and years. And now they are not only being set free to do it, but they are being paid. They are being paid. ICE is offering a generous starting salary along with a nearly $100,000 signing bonus right now to join their ranks. Can you imagine, Tracy, if that was what was being offered to public school teachers?
Yeah, I can. But of course, we're in a moment. We're in a moment where, of course, the Department of Education is being defunded, but ICE is being funded, right? Like, here we are. This is the moment we have all been nastily anticipating anybody who is speaking up during the 2024 election to say absolutely not on my watch.
503-231-8187. We'll return to this topic in just a moment, but let's give our listeners a chance to weigh in. Tawazi, you are first up. Good morning.
Good morning. I really love KBOO, and I appreciate what you two bring to the show, and obviously your engineer as well, and just the whole, thank you, KBOO. So, and thank you. The KBOO community. So with that out front, I just want to mention that we are the only ones coming for us. We can't anticipate that anybody's going to rescue us from fascism. It's not like the Marines are going to land on our shore and make sure that we have fair elections and free society. If we want that for ourselves, we are the guarantors of our liberty. So with that said, and bearing in mind that the KBOO community makes this happen, we can show up for each other. It's actually pretty easy. All you have to do is think about the people who might be suffering under fascism and go over and check on them. Because ultimately, it's empathy, kindness, and direct action which are going to stop fascism. If they're coming for your neighbor and you're standing next to your neighbor, it's going to be a lot harder for them to take your neighbor. So, you know, think about in your heart of hearts what you can do to make the world better. I don't have much power. I'm very poor. I live in a moldy, falling down trailer. Like, I don't have influence and wealth and power. All I have is my voice. But you know what? Because I have my voice, I am a big mouth. And people have to listen to my baloney because it's what I can do. So inside of each person listening to my voice right now is something that they know they can do to make this world better. And until we all step forward with that, fascism is going to keep winning. So, you know, for you, Abe and Tracy, too much information is what you can do. And I love you so much for that. And I'm sure you have multitudes of other contributions. So, you know, I just invite people to use their powers for good, because that's the only way we're going to get through this.
Woo! Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. That was wonderful. Tawazi, you and your baloney are welcome on this program anytime. Those were true words. Those were true words, Tracy. We all have a voice and we can all use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think we've talked about, too, you know, everyone wants to, like, this grand something, but it's really collectively the small things that we all do that will get us either through this moment or get us on the other side of this moment. But I really want to shake everyone from their apathy and feeling like they're powerless. We are not powerless. Collectively, we have all the power. We're being gaslit into believing we have none. Right. And so how do we reassure each other in the way that Tawazi just did, that no, we do have our power. Here's how you can use it.
Yeah. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to commend both of you for your truth-telling, your outspoken truth-telling in a time when a time of capitulation. This is a horrific and exhausting time, of course. I want to make a couple comments. One, I read an article in The New Yorker about USAID. They quoted Lancet, which is a very stellar medical journal, which said that USAID saved 72 million lives over two decades, mm-hmm. that they distributed $35 billion of food and medicine with 100,000 workers, and they were just cursorily dismissed by Elon Musk as a criminal organization. Yep. I was so saddened and overwhelmed when I learned that the Trump administration this year cut the food trucks $1 billion, which is such a massive cut, you know. It's so totally irrational. I want to recommend two websites, one titled Legal Eagle, which actually lists 200 violations that Trump committed this year, beginning with birthright citizenship. And the second one is titled John Brown, another very unflinching, uncompromising legal website. And we need, of course, we're amidst a low information people, a consumer people, which is very far removed from being historical and political. We are commanded by a distractionist. So we have quite a immense work to do. I think that the right wing falls apart, and it has fallen apart, just as our democracy and our language, our media and our universities are falling apart. They're being destroyed. Here's a quote from John Shelby Spong, who wrote books against fundamentalism. He said, "Hysterical fundamentalism is not the path to the future, is not the way to the future, but the last gasp of the past."
I like that.
Good. So, what else did I want to say? Well, we have to be hopeful. We can't be negative. And we just have to, 140 representatives have already pleaded, signed for Trump's resignation. There is a growing movement, and of course the people are just outraged. In California, people lived in internalized rage from Reagan, Duke Majin, and Wilson. Each one vetoed more bills than the ones before. You know, the Meshuggah people. Well, this is our reality for the whole nation. So thanks for letting me speak for a couple minutes.
Sure. And hey, thank you for the call.
You're very welcome.
Much appreciated. 503-231-8187. Do you have any thoughts on Mark's call, Tracy?
I do. I mean, and so when you have outlets like The Lancet speaking out and saying and quantifying the work that USAID did, and you have a person like Elon Musk, a self-proclaimed billionaire who does nothing in philanthropy, telling us that that's waste, is telling you everything you need to know. Everything you need to know. It's a waste to take care of other people. It's a waste to provide resources to people who are in need of those resources. And ultimately, it's a waste to save lives of people that you don't like or care for.
Yeah, that is just a hideous thing to say. 503-231-8187. Well, we have hit most of the items on my list, Tracy. One that remains, and this is one that really bothers me too, this also dates back to the Doge period. Sounds like I'm talking about an artistic... During the Doge period... No. we essentially ended public funding of basic scientific research and data collection in this country. I'm talking about the gutting of agencies like the National Institutes for Health, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Science Foundation, and on and on and on. This used to be, it still is, but I think this is going to change by the end of Trump's term. This used to be the place where the world's preeminent minds, the best scientists anywhere, came so that they could practice their craft at the very highest level. And that whole endeavor was robustly supported by government funded, which is to say taxpayer funded investment. And so as such, we were a magnet for the very brightest people in the world who would come here to do their thing. That for me is an enormous point of pride. I was proud to be from the country where we valued research and science so highly that we supported it publicly and that we attracted brilliant people from all around the world. To me, that was a much more important point of pride than, you know, how big our military is, or how many guns we have, or yada, yada, yada. And that's gone now. That's gone now. And that is something that I think we're going to regret for a long time. I don't know if that's something you can get back once you've given it away. But another, Tracy, of these incredibly painful self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, I think when all of the wreckage is, you know, really kind of assessed, right? All of the things that have been ruined and wrecked, it is going to take decades. It took decades to build up things like the Department of Education. It took decades to build up USAID. It took one swift and stupid leader to get rid of it. But it will take decades to get us back to where we were as a society. And I think whoever we're going to choose moving forward as we get past this moment we're in is going to have as much energy as Trump does to ruin things in the reverse, right? They're going to have as much energy to try and make things right. And what we'll need to do is get rid of the Republican Party as obstructionist to any of that.
Wow. That's wow. I mean, that's, I agree. How do you do that? Mark just
blaming everything that's wrong on them. They are the people that are supporting Trump. They are the people who are currently, what we do as progressives and left people on the left is eat our own. We need to stop doing that and begin using the same strategies that they do. Right? Everything that's wrong that happened, even currently, is being blamed on Joe Biden. Joe Biden was in office for 4 years. Everything else is being blamed on Obama. Everything before that was blamed on Clinton. No, we need to do the exact same thing that they have done historically to say, no, everything wrong right now is because of Trump and the Republicans.
Yeah, I agree, but there's something so deep there, right? When you consider the diehard base that animates the Trump movement, right? We're talking about retrenched racists and patriarchs. And I know I'm painting with an incredibly broad brush here, so please forgive me for that. But bear with me for just a moment. This represents a strain in American thought and in American politics that goes back even before the founding of the country. We seem to have this irreducible chunk of people who will not let go of the racism, who will not let go of the militant nationalism, who will not let go of the celebration of ignorance, who just won't let any of that go, whose pride and identity as American is tied up in symbology and in sloganeering and not in any or many of the concrete things that this country has managed to accomplish over the years. What do you do about those people? That's my question.
Once again, I mean, this is where whoever takes the helm next is going to have to, when bring back diversity, equity, inclusion work, is going to have to invest a lot of resources in building up that infrastructure that is going to have to exemplify that and the ideals of diversity, equity, inclusion in their own life and in their own way of being and knowing, because that there is the key, right? People can unlearn racism. They just have to be shown, hello, this is why we're here. This is why we don't have nice things. We don't have nice things because we've been told we shouldn't share the nice things with people who we don't like because of their racial identity, and understanding that racism is fully socially constructed, right? Like, we have to get back to educating folks. We'll have to invest in the Department of Education and building that back up. Because, of course, right, what we know about fascism and where we're at in history is that fascism cannot exist in an educated society. The two are incompatible.
And that's why we see this dismantling of education, higher education, research, all of that is of a piece to get us so dumbed down that we will believe that the material conditions of our lives, however terrible they are the responsibility of those people, right? We need a scapegoat. The only way the scapegoat can exist is if we're dumb enough to believe it.
So being told by a guy who has a whole plate full of cookies that we can only have one cookie, but watch out because that immigrant over there is trying to steal your cookie.
Basically.
That's Republicanism 101. You heard it here first. 503-231-8187. Well, we are up towards the end of the program here. We've talked about the horrible things that have transpired in this first year of Trump's second presidency. We need a little hope. We need a little dose of hopium here, Tracy. What do you got for us?
I mean, I feel like Tawazi said it, and I've said it on this program too. Like, where is the us care in all of this? I feel like as an individualistic society, we focus on self-care, you know, our own, you know, restoration and support for ourselves to get through hard times. This moment requires us to move beyond ourselves to what is it to care for ourselves and others at the same time. What does it look like to extend care to people who are in most need of that care and support, whether if you have resources or just the personality to check on others? In this moment we're in, we are requiring ourselves to move beyond self, right? Because the reason we're here is because there are a lot of selfish people, greedy people, people who have put themselves above the needs of community. And so where does community care fall into your locus of control? What might that look like? How do we check on folks? How do we put our bodies potentially in between ice and our community and neighbors? How do we set up networks of support? How do we check on our unsheltered neighbors and our elders and other folks? Because once again, no one's coming to save us. We will have to save ourselves. And it requires a level of activation as humans to speak out and share the truth, but also to be in community with people who are living right alongside of you and experiencing the same kind of terrible experience.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, and it's true for all of the reasons we've talked about on today's program and in many programs leading up to this one. But it's also particularly true right now because it's cold outside. We got a winter to get through, metaphorically and literally. We have a winter we need to get through. And so for all the reasons that we're talking about today, and for reasons that have to do with simply that it's cold outside and a lot of people don't have any place to go to be warm, you're right. That this is a time when the emphasis needs to be placed beyond oneself and onto what one considers to be their community. And I would say even farther, perhaps stretch that notion of community to fit everybody. We're all going to need to lean on each other to get through this, not just to stay warm over the winter, but to hold on to what's left of our representative democracy so that we can begin rebuilding it better than it was before, rebuilding it in such a way as that it works for the benefit of all of us rather than just a few with all the cookies. So, yeah, but Tracy, as usual, you are spot on. It is through helping each other that we will make it through this.
Well, it's also come to the point of the show where I have to encourage you to join the KBOO Fights Back campaign. We are trying to reach a year-end goal of $75,000. If you like what you hear on this program and other amazing programs on KBOO Radio, we invite you, if you have the ability, to donate to KBOO. You can go on to kboo.fm/give. You can click the red box that says donate in the mobile app. You can text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
We are hoping to continue funding this station that is bare bones in it, so we can bring you the truth, engage your conversation, uplift your ideas and your voice as we move through this moment in time we're in as well.
That's right. Supporting this radio station is a good way to knit those bonds of community and also to help provide the station with the duct tape and the chewing gum and the bailing wire that we need to keep everything going. It's not easy, folks. It is not easy to keep a radio station on the air, and we need your help to do it. As Tracy mentioned, it's super easy. The easiest way probably is to go to KBOO.fm and click on the donate button. It's fast. It's easy. It's discreet, and you'll feel better for having done it. So that brings us to the end of today's program. Tracy, send us home.
Yes, it's cold outside. Please bundle up and check on folks who you know probably need some support. We're going to get through this, but we're going to have to do it together. So as it's 30 and 40 outside overnight, thank goodness it's not pouring down raining. It's still really cold. And of course, anything you can do to help your neighbors and help each other through this moment is a good thing, a good start when we're talking about community care.
All right. This has been Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. For Tracy Simmons, thank you so much for tuning in over the course of this year. Thank you for supporting this radio station. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next year. Thanks for tuning in.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
You're listening to our KBOO Fights Back campaign. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st so